Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Every Wednesday morning at 9, Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions. Our guest today's career spans over 30 years in the aerospace and defense sector. And prior to joining Sotera, she was the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of SRA International, where she oversaw four main operating groups with over 6,000 employees. Prior to SRA, Ms. Alderson was president of Defense Solutions Group at SAIC with responsibility for over 14,000 employees focused in support of the critical missions of the federal agencies. Before SAIC, Ms. Alderson was president and systems engineering group vice president at Antion, where she grew the business an impressive $65 million to $400 million. Ms. Alderson holds a Bachelor's of Science degree and a Master's of Science degree from Virginia Polytech. And first off, Deb, I just got to thank you for taking your time out of your busy day to join us here on Women of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, Aileen and Gigi. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
So, Deb, women are really still the minority in leadership positions in the government and the aerospace industry. And you've been in this industry for over 25 years, a very male-dominated organizations. Mm-hmm. So what made you go into this industry?
Well, actually, Gigi, it was out of necessity, to be brutally honest. I met my husband in graduate school at Virginia Tech. He got an MBA. I got my Master of Science. And he quickly got a job with AT&T. And I'm originally from Norfolk, Virginia. We relocated to Northern Virginia. I started looking for a job and had a really difficult time finding one. I guess my first job was as a GS4 clerk typist with a master's degree. So I definitely started at the bottom, and I should mention I can't type. So that was another critical barrier for me. But that sort of started my my network, which I think is so critical and something I hope we get to talk about today in the defense or the federal space. And just through working with the government, I worked for NAVMAT, civilian personnel. I increased my network. I met people. I ended up landing a job, actually, before working in Department of Defense, supporting the Department of Education with the first magnet school program that they had. And from there, just expanded. Once the education budget got cut, a friend of mine said, you need to go to DOD. That's where the money is. And she actually introduced me to her brother, went there, and that's kind of how it all started.
So have you seen over the years, both Aileen and I were in high tech for 30 years, also male-dominated, associated with the federal government. We've seen a lot of changes. Have you seen a lot of changes in terms of women's positions in these companies over the course of your career?
Oh, yes. Significant, especially over the probably the past 10 years, a real uptick. And I credit that to just people's appreciation for diversity and the importance of diversity when it comes to problem solving. And if you just look at the demographics of our government customer have changed, you know, the company that was smart enough to recognize that early and realize that we had government customers that were diverse and matched them up with a support contractor who was the same were the ones that I think really got a jump start on things. So seeing a huge change in the industry for the positive there.
I think that's you bring up an excellent point because we interview women from government all the time on the show, and we talk a lot about how the government really does do a much better job of hiring a diverse population, and not just hiring them, but promoting them to leadership right. positions. And so I think it's important that the companies that work with the government support them and sell right. to them.
Exactly, Gigi. Actually, when I first started supporting the Department of Defense, it was a focus with the Navy. With the Aegis Shipbuilding Program, actually, and I was very impressed at what the Navy was doing to support upward mobility. It was just amazing. So really taking that giant step way before industry did.
Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions. Deb, you are the president and the CEO of a pretty large defense contractor. Can you tell us a little bit more about Sotera and what you do for them?
Well, I started at Sotera in July of 2013, and I have to tell you both, this has been my goal since the beginning of my career. I've had this passion about leading an organization, and I've had plenty of opportunities in the past at Anion Corporation, SEIC, and SRA, and fantastic mentors during that time. But I did want an opportunity to lead on my own and to put into place things that were very, very important to me, and that's a real focus on the people and the mission. So now I have that opportunity to do that. And I'm very fortunate to be part of a company that's absolutely fantastic. Our people are focused. We're making a difference in what we do. We're working on some very interesting programs. I would say our focus is in providing high-end solutions in the national security arena. So all the recent uptick in some of our domestic threats is something that Sotera actually can help serve the mission to help counter some of those things. It's just it's an incredible opportunity and a wonderful team.
Well, Deb, you took the helm of or reaching your goal at an interesting time, and the last 2 years have been a difficult time in any company supporting the federal government, especially in the areas of defense, with some of the challenges with the budget and some of the other issues associated with the challenges that we're faced from a defense perspective overseas. Can you tell me about some of your biggest challenges over the last 2 years?
Yeah, and I think, Aileen, it goes back to the companies that will survive in the current environment, which is much different, are those that have what I call good bones. You know, a real focus on the mission, a focus on their people, and an understanding that in support of the government, it's a partnership, right? Whether you're a publicly traded firm, which I've been a part of, or privately held, which is what we are by Ares. And the importance here is to understand that you constantly have to provide value. We're going to deal with sequestration. We're going to deal with budget cuts. Heck, even when we have a snow day, it impacts our bottom line. So just making sure that you keep a focus on the mission and you continue to bid and execute, I think, is the secret to success.
Deb, your previous role was that you were the COO at SRA, which is a big position, although not as large as the one you have now, but at a much bigger company. So how did having that COO role help prepare you for your current role?
It was invaluable. I have the utmost respect for SRA and Dr. Volgeneau, who is the founder there. And just having the ability to be in a role and supporting a great CEO and Bill Ballhouse. But Bill actually gave me the latitude that I needed to drive change in the company and to continue to test out and reinforce my theories about putting people first and the importance of people engagement.
Deborah, earlier you brought up networking. Networking and resources are not clear to women in the workforce today, mm-hmm. certainly not easily found in the male-dominated area mm-hmm. of defense. Can you tell me a little bit about how you've been able to leverage your network right. and achieve some of the results you've had in your career?
Well, I think first off, and this sounds pretty basic, but this comes back to my mom, and let's give a shout out to Pat Petrovic, my mother constantly reinforcing the importance of people and never forgetting where you came from. And I have managed to keep that in the forefront throughout my career and just staying engaged, going back and staying in touch with those that had helped you throughout your career or you'd learned something from. And that's kind of how you start building and expanding that network. And then taking advantage of some of the Professional Service Council, AFSCEA, Women in Technology, Women in Defense, Heroines in Technology. There's so many networks out there, but you got to make the commitment. And then you got to follow through. So when you meet someone in one of those engagements, it's making sure that you do follow through and that you're always available if they need something, and then you'll find that they'll also reciprocate. So it's work, but it's worth it.
Today we're speaking with Deb Alderson, President and CEO of Sotera Defense Solutions. Coming up, we'll hear about Deb's early years. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions.
So, Deb, you mentioned that you grew up in Norfolk, Virginia. So did growing up in a defense town like Norfolk help to prepare you for what you do today?
Gigi, not at all, to be perfectly blunt. We were farmers, and actually no one in my family has ever been in the military. So when I got my first job in defense, I actually called my grandfather up and told him, you know, that I was working for the Department of Defense and I was working on maintenance of Navy warships. And all he could grasp is that I must be decorating the captain's quarters on a ship, because that's what a woman did, and that's the only way it could fit in the Navy. So it was really kind of humorous. And throughout his life, he'd ask me how my job was doing, and he kept trying to understand what I did, and it was very, very difficult. But because I hadn't worked with the military, because, again, we were farmers from Virginia, I found that it was such a passionate challenge for me. I mean, I just had no appreciation for how these individuals put their lives on the line every day. So we all learn in school about freedom and the importance of being an American and the people that fight for you. But when you actually start meeting them and interfacing with them, I can't even share with you just the type of motivation that created. So it's been, and even though it wasn't my background, I think because it wasn't, it created a passion that I could have never anticipated.
So let's go back to those early years growing up on the farm. Was there somebody in your life or something that really did inspire you to go on and get your not only bachelor's degree, but master's degree and move to Washington? And that's a big jump.
Yeah, it is. And I go back. I know I did a shout out for Pat Petrovic, my mom, and I can continue to do many of those throughout this show. But my mother was and continues to be my mentor and a driving force. She actually lives three doors up, so I'm very, very blessed. And her health is wonderful, and her husband's wonderful. But my mom did not have an easy go of it. She ended up being a single mom, widower at a young age with three children. She did not have an advanced education, had not gone to college. So I was actually the first member of my family to go to college. And even though she had not been there, she knew the importance, and she put that first. And I would hit barriers, as we've all discussed, sometimes being a woman in certain situations, not only in the workplace, but also in school. She just never let me give up. So wanted me to better myself. And you know, people talk about glass ceilings. I can tell you early on, my mom said, there is no such thing. You crash through anything. There's never a barrier. There's just a speed bump.
And so did you have brothers? You mentioned there were three. What's your position in the family? And are there brothers or sisters?
I'm the oldest of three girls.
It's funny because I am one of two girls. Aileen is one of five girls. And I always say that I think that in a way that was an advantage because my parents didn't have an opportunity to have a double standard. There were just the girls. And so we were made to do all the normal boy chores and everything else. Was that your experience?
Oh, very much so. And because it was all women, because my dad had died at an early age, my mom has since remarried to Kurt Petrovic, who's also a rock star. We did everything. And we lived off and on with my grandparents. My grandmother and my grandfather were very, very helpful through my childhood. But we did all the chores, just like you said, and we split them up. But because of that, we're survivors also. It was just, we are very, very close, all of us. And it's been I'm very, very blessed with my family.
Deb, you mentioned you went to Virginia Tech, a Hokie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have somewhat of a unique major for a CEO of a defense contractor, clothing, textiles, and related arts. First, can you tell me a little bit about why you chose this major and what is the traditional industry you find that degree? And then how did you end up in defense?
Yeah, well, it's kind of funny. Again, I was the first one to go to college, and I wanted to be a lawyer. So I got into Virginia Tech, and my mom and my grandmother helped me, you know, financially, along with Social Security. So it was, you know, it was not a luxury by any means. And it was also back when you were in and out in 4 years. It was very important. But so I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. So I majored in political science. And I get there and I took some wonderful classes. And I actually took a lot of classes with the ROTC at the time in military policies and learned strategy and loved it. But at the same time decided in my freshman year, which many do, I didn't really want to be a lawyer. So I called my mom up. I said, Mom, I really don't like this. I'd like to change my major. And she's, you know, Deborah Ann, I'd like to help you. So we just talked through things. And she was so cute. She goes, well, honey, you like clothes. So why don't you check out the College of Clothing Textile. It was the College of Home Ec, actually, at the time. And it's since changed the name where there's more of a focus on human resource management. But she said, why don't you go to the College of Home Ec? So I go over there. And this was no just going and knocking on the door. You had to apply a lot of rigor. My original focus was going to be on retail, fashion merchandising, and I wanted to go to New York and be a buyer. In order to do that, you had to take biology, chemistry to understand all the textiles, actually dissect a fetal pig because the muscle structure is very similar to that of a human for designing clothes. By the way, you don't do any cooking, but I took architect classes. I mean, just very diverse, sociology, psychology, so enough to have a minor actually in sciences. Then I was ready to graduate. Also took a lot of classes in the business college. Ready to graduate, and they asked me to stay on and get my master's and actually teach business to the undergrads. So they paid for it. I had an assistantship, so I stayed there. And then met my husband, like I said, in graduate school. And that's one of the reasons why when I moved to Northern Virginia and I was applying for a job, there was, you know, they would look at my background and just say, well, what do you cook and sew? So it was just, it was very, very frustrating because it's a very, very difficult major. But made it through that, and that's why I got the GS4 clerk typist job. And then I was on the alumni board of the college once I graduated and actually worked to help change the name to make it easier for those going forward to find positions. Now, how does that help me? Actually, my major professor, who since passed, Dr. Tozier, came to see me at my first defense job and literally comes in my office, closes the door, and goes, how did your degree help you? And what it did, because it was so diverse, first I had the sciences, which gave me a knack for understanding the technicalities of the industry, but also the sociology and psychology that I took helped me with people. So I thought it was absolutely a perfect degree. And I think it demonstrates you can kind of do anything as long as you have the ability to learn.
Well, you certainly learned problem solving. So you mentioned your first job was a GS4 as a typist. Mm-hmm. But my curiosity is, what was your second job?
My second job was actually, from there, as I said, my network expanded, and I went to work for Inter-America. Inter-America had contracts with the Department of Education, and it was a 8A firm, a minority-owned firm, and actually worked on vocational education and the first proposal for the magnet schools. And there I met Dr. Rebecca Oxford, who became my mentor. And she was the one that warned me that because I was very young and really didn't have an understanding of the budget, the federal budget. So she gave me heads up that there was going to be a big cut in the Department of Education budget. And this was in the 80s, early 80s, and they were going to shift a lot of those dollars over to defense and gave me the contacts I needed there.
So, Deb, early in your career, you were president of Antion Engineering Services. Mm-hmm. How did you prepare for that technical a job? And, you know, it sounds like your educational background helped. You must have been dealing with some very complicated technical issues.
Right. And I was. And I think one thing I learned early on, which I'm sure you guys have also, I surround myself with A players, very, very smart people, and recognize that they are smarter than I am. But I need to have enough of a grasp and an understanding to put myself in the customer role. So that's what I always did, to make sure if I could understand it, because your customer is also diverse and has varying degrees of technical knowledge. At Antion Corporation, that we were actually an acquisition, Techmatics, which I had kind of grown up with. We took the company from 12 people to almost 800 and then were acquired by Antion. Joe Camp was the CEO at the time. Again, a wonderful mentor. But I surrounded myself with people who understood the technical issues. I always focused on hiring people out of the military so they had the operational expertise and then had a respect of the customer and the mission. So it was difficult, but I knew enough and I still know enough that I don't have all the answers. And I have to trust the people that I have as part of the team.
And you did grow that company. You grew it from $65 million to $400 million, which is just tremendous mm-hmm. growth. If you look back at that time, what do you really attribute that success to?
Well, I think first, Joe Camp allowing me to drive the business and run the business, because when he acquired Techmatics, it was about $60, $65 million in revenue, and he let us stay as a business segment within Antion instead of busting the group up. And then it was, again, just making sure that you kept your commitment to the people and the mission. So we did our proper job with capturing business, focusing on things, key hires, but most importantly, bidding. This industry, you can't win it unless you bid it. So very aggressive in bidding in the space. And then once you win it, executing and holding on to that base work. Now, of that $400 million, about $100 million was an internal transfer over from an acquisition, so not all organic. But still, that demonstrates the confidence that, Joe Camp had in the team to grow.
I think your point about bidding is really key. You know, there's a certain strategy behind it, right? Some people tend to be more aggressive and bid something, even if maybe they don't have all pieces of the solution when they bid it, and then others tend to wait until they have the whole thing. Do you have a particular strategy that you use?
Well, you typically have to partner because you're not going to find all the expertise resident in one company. But you have to choose your partners wisely and make sure that, you know, it's a good professional relationship, that both sides keep their commitment. It's a very, very small community. So I've always made sure, along with my team, that, you know, that we keep our commitments. But there's lots of partners, and I think that's what the customer wants. Again, that's another way of bringing diversity into the portfolio or into your solution, and then also provides additional reach back.
Today we're speaking with Deb Alderson, President and CEO of Sotera Defense Solutions. Coming up, we'll ask Deb about what it's like to be in the CEO role of a defense contractor. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions.
So, Deb, today in the United States, just 23 of the Fortune 500 CEOs are female, and less than 4% of the boardrooms in aerospace companies have women on them. So you have obviously just really shattered that glass ceiling. What do you think, what strategy have you used to get to where you are? And what do you think is going to really make the change for other women to be able to get to that very highest level?
I think, you know, and again, not to make this too simplistic, but it's being true to yourself, right? You have to earn the position just like everybody else does. So make sure that you have a strategy, you have a vision, and that you're aligned with that every day. So the only reason you get a job like I have or others, whether you're male or female, is that you can perform, basically. And that takes a track record of performance. And I think what we're seeing in our industry now is that, like I said earlier, people are recognizing the importance of that first success, proven success, and diversity of thought, and what that brings to a leadership role in a company, whether it's running the company day-to-day or in the boardroom.
But somehow, I think even with that recognition, there's still that final layer that women really haven't conquered. Do you have any advice either for companies that are looking for board members, perhaps, or C-level positions?
Well, it's funny. Several people have talked to me about either speaking at things or being on a board because I'm a woman. So I would hope that that goes away, actually, and that it comes back to the fact of what value can I provide? What does my past experience and my past success demonstrate? And also my ability to deal with challenge, right? So it's difficult because, you know, you don't want to be pushy. And I think that's a tendency women have, you know, sometimes to kind of sit back. And I was raised where if you did things correctly and you treated people fairly, then everything would work out okay. I will tell you, over my 30 years experience, I've seen cases where that's not the fact, right? But instead of fighting that or changing my values, I stuck to my values, and I believe that's what got me to where I am today.
Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions. Deb, in Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, she talks about her career being a jungle gym, not a straight line. You talked about having some difficult situations. I know you had an unplanned departure from SAIC. Can you share with us what you learned on how to handle difficult turns in your career, what you learned about yourself, what you learned about how to deal with those difficult decisions?
Well, first, you know, you gain an appreciation very quickly. That's a risk of a position, of a job that I had. I was running a very large organization, 15,000 plus people. You can have a bad player. And with all the processes and everything that you have in place, it's hard to identify that. If someone wants to do something wrong, they can find a way to do something wrong. But I'm accountable and responsible when I'm running a group like that. I think what I learned in it, and I briefly mentioned it earlier, you know, my value system has always been around taking care of people, and serving the mission. And throughout my career, that focus on engagement, on networking, always being there when people need you, being true to yourself, that really paid off. Because I was basically called in on a Monday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, had no idea this was going to happen. And by the time I got down to the garage, my BlackBerry was wiped out. Everything I had was wiped out. So you end up going home, and your life is rocked, pretty much. You also have to tell your children, who are old enough, and one of them actually in the industry, that this is going to happen, and that, you know, mommy's going to be in the Post and the Wall Street Journal. Then you call your mom, who comes down and helps you get a new cell phone and takes good care of you. And, of course, a wonderful husband in Dick Alderson, who's there supporting me. So I had Dick, my son Billy, and John, and my mom, all there to support. But what was even more gratifying, first, that puts it in perspective. You know, you've got your family. That's what's most important. The reach out I had from friends, people I had worked with, you know, 20 years ago, calling me up, cards and flowers, and we know how good you are. And, you know, just the pour out that I got from people was just unbelievable. And then within 3 or 4 days to be talking to Dr. Volgenau about my next opportunity. So I think that's what proves that if you stay true to yourself and what's really important, and it has to be good stuff, by the way, that everything will be all right. And many told me that my career was over, basically, that I should just look for something different to do.
You not only got your career back on the same track, you actually reached new heights. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I love this saying, and I can contribute to several people, but sometimes things don't turn out like you plan. They turn out better. In your case, you reached new heights to your career. You actually reached one of your lifetime goals, which was to become a CEO. So do you have any advice for anybody who's going out there facing the same thing? Because those rock your world events happen to most people once you get to a certain level in a company.
Yes, they do. And I've talked to many other women and others, not just women, in the industry about how you deal with something like this. And again, these things are just, they're how we all were raised. Just don't give up. Right. And if you know that you have done the best that you can and you're the best person you can, and if you're passionate, like I said, that passion I had for this industry in the early 80s has not gone away. It's something I didn't want to walk away from. And I was going to fight to get that back because I had invested my time in focusing on the people and the mission because that's what I enjoyed. That's what was important to me. And just to walk away from that, I would feel like I had lost. And that everything that I had been taught through my life and everything I'd enjoyed was going to be over. And I was not going to do that. I just was not going to allow myself to fail.
So, Deb, I think we've gotten a sense of it, but I would love to hear you describe your leadership style. What do you really think the most important elements are that are necessary for somebody to be a good leader?
You'll hear it over and over again, and people always know me as the people person. And I just can't stress that enough because that's probably the hardest part of anyone's job. It's so much easier just to get in the car and drive home and leave the problems behind. And I'm sure we've all been in that case where someone comes in and dumps their problem on you at the end of the day, and then they get in the car and drive home and they're okay. And you're sitting there worried about their problem. That's part of leading. I really think it's important just to always keep that focus on the people and appreciation for how they're feeling. You know, if they have an issue and they asked you to help or ask for guidance, that one day that it may take you to respond may seem like weeks to them. So just having an appreciation for that.
So you've led some very large organizations. I think a lot of people find it easy to focus on the people when they're leading a small team, 4, 5, 10 people. But you've led teams of 15,000 people. Mm-hmm. How do you stay a people person when you're running an organization that large?
Well, you make the commitment. Right. So when I was running a larger organization, every month I would talk to all new hires and we'd have a phone call and I'd give them an opportunity to learn a little bit about me and a little bit about the new organization. But then I'd ask them every one of the call and it's sometimes there could be 80 people on that call. Why did you join? And then I wanted to let them know that I was always accessible. So anyone could call me, ask me a question. And I've kept that throughout my whole career. And it really... it lets people know that you're engaged and that, again, you're accessible.
Being accessible, have you ever had any mentors or mentees that you have worked with or had working with you?
I have a lot of mentees, actually. People that I've been there for them for many, many years, back from my early days at Techmatics. I still have people that reach out to me. And they're there for me also, so it's a joint thing. We've talked about my mom, always there for me, and someone I just continue to learn from, and she always challenges me. I mean, she was the one that just sort of, that the day when I had the kind of the upheaval in my career, just, you know, I wasn't going to fail, and she certainly wasn't going to let me. I've had others, though. Admiral Meyer, who has since passed, was a very well-respected admiral in the Navy and ran the Aegis program. He probably taught me to be tough, tougher than most, and also to make sure I had an appreciation for the value of next career military. Because a lot of people think, well, they don't really know the business. My goodness, look at what they do, the budgets they manage, the risks they take. They put their lives on the line, right? So he taught me that early on in my career. Then mentors like Joe Camp at Antion, who just would stress the importance of not only the people and the mission, but understanding the business and the business dynamics. Ken Dahlberg at SAIC, who flat out would say things, you know, if you thought I hired you because you're a woman, you're crazy. I need you to do a job. And I think that was just, you know, again, just his openness and appreciation for my talents and what I could do. And now I'd say at this point in my career, I have a wonderful firm in Aries who owns us, and I'm building new mentors and our board, and then the new team that I have. So I'm constantly learning, and I think that's also very important.
You brought up networking before. So a lot of companies don't have formal mentoring programs. Can you talk about how somebody, some of our listeners out there, might network and find mentors that are not maybe in traditional places?
Well, you can find them anywhere. I guess it's your willingness to be open. But we go back and I encourage people to join organizations like Women in Technology, Women in Defense. They're really very engaging. They have informal and formal mentor programs. Joining organizations like the Professional Service Council or AFSCEA at work. So if we go back, so there are organizations, but then there's also the network that you have at the office. So being, again, willing to go in and engage with someone. If you want to learn more about finance in your company and there's a CFO there and maybe you feel a little intimidated to skip four or five levels, which you need to be sensitive to, let your supervisor know that you'd like to learn more about finance. You'd like to have an opportunity to talk to that person. And then you're showing initiative and an eagerness, which, you know, who doesn't appreciate that? And they're going to help you get that audience. So it's kind of reaching out. It's not, somebody's not going to come to you and say, would you like me to be engaged with you and would you like me to be your mentor? You basically have to ask, and then you can't tax them. Don't ever go to a mentor or when you're networking and keep asking for things, right? That can really wear everybody down. But having that open dialogue and that discussion and just talking through things, I think is a wonderful, again, part of your networking and part of the mentor relationship that you might be looking for.
Today we're speaking with Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions. Coming up, we'll ask Deb what she does outside of work and how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions.
So, Deb, what is it that you like to do when you're not working? I'm sure that's not a tremendous amount of time, but do you have any hobbies or special interests?
Well, I really like to work out. That's important. I think that's important for all of us. So first thing in the morning, I get my workout in, clears my head, makes me feel better, and that I'm pretty committed to. I haven't been my whole life. I was a couch potato for a while, but I now am totally dedicated to that. My family, I just, you know, again, I am so blessed. I have a wonderful husband of 35 years who's always there for me. I have my two sons, Billy and John. I now have a wonderful daughter-in-law, Dana, and a beautiful granddaughter, Olivia Love. So I have plenty to keep me busy, along with Mom and Pop, who are up the street. A lot of family time. And then my husband's mom is right near the house, so we have our Sunday family dinners. I actually try to cook, not really very good at it. Gardening, I love gardening because actually you can start, it has a start and a finish, which so many things in our business don't. Takes forever to get a, you know, you submit a proposal and then it takes forever for the award and then there's a protest. So I like things that kind of come to closure. And I would say that, you know, my personal time with the working out, then my family time. When I get home from work, I typically stop. That's my, I mean, I want to, if I need to work, of course, I'm on the computer, I'm on my phone. But I really try and have some downtime for me. They laugh at me. Many know that once I get in my car, I actually put my bedroom slippers on because that's when I know the day's over and it's time to just reflect not only on work and how I can do a better job or what I need to do, but also get me prepared to get home with my family and make sure that that's a quality time.
I do think, you know, we have a lot of women in here who say that their outside activities complement their work life. And sometimes because they are different, you mentioned how gardening has closure to it where, you know, your work life things tend to drag on. But also that element of having the downtime or the alone time, maybe your workout time, where you can just think and reflect. And I think, you know, I find that some of my best ideas come at times like that. Have you had that experience?
Very much so. And I get, you know, I really encourage people when they're asking me, you know, how do you balance work life, right? Especially, you know, younger women who are getting ready to start a family. And I went through that and I had a lot of help, but it was a lot of stress. And everybody thinks they can be, you know, Wonder Woman or Super Mom and everything else. And what you forget is the time to yourself. If you are passionate and driven to have a career, you can't feel like you're being selfish if you find that time, because that actually makes you a better mom, a better partner, and a better business person.
Deb, as you pointed out, your success is not only limited to your work, but also your personal life. But were there occasions where you had to make some tough decisions between your personal and your professional life?
Yeah, and it happened early on, but thank goodness, again, with my husband, Dick, he was always there. But we both were in high-powered jobs and travel with young children. So we would try and, you know, have to balance our travel. And there were times when, you know, I couldn't do it. And, of course, the family always comes first. But then I found the secret there was to make sure that you built a team dynamic so everybody took care of everybody. And early on when I moved into management, it was that we would always be there for each other. So you'd never miss a softball game. You'd never miss a baseball game, a basketball game. You'd be there for your family, and you'd have backup. Now, in order to – you had to earn that. So pulling in all night, working on a proposal or whatever you needed to do to get a deliverable in to cover for somebody else was really important. And never leaving your team behind. So they saw no matter what my role was, as I grew in management and leadership, I was still always there for them. So you had backup.
You talk about networks for your career, but you're talking about personal networks too, because you had a couple there. You had your in-laws, mm-hmm. your mother. Mm-hmm. I did too. My mom and dad mm-hmm. live around the corner, and that really is a lesson learned. Is that something that you'd recommend for those young families out there? It doesn't necessarily only mean your family. You can build a network with your community.
Very much so, and your neighbors, because, I mean, this again, you're going to find that certainly, you know, up and down the block, you're going to have moms who are in the same situation. So being there to help each other and being a good neighbor, really, it's critical. I've had friends that I know that once they started to build a family, they actually would move closer to their in-laws or to their parents. And that's great if that's doable, but in many cases it's not. My mom was in Norfolk. My mother-in-law was right around the corner. Now it's great to have them both like within less than a mile away. But that definitely, my mom was always there if I needed her. But I also had an extended network and friends, many friends that would help me. And I do the same for them.
Deb, we've had many successful women who say that one of the most important decisions that you can make when you're growing up is who you're going to marry. And it sounds like you've mentioned your husband, Dick, a couple of times. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you did a pretty good job with that. Has he always really supported your career? And I know he has had a career of his own, right?
Oh, yeah. It was funny because when we first got married and then, you know, I got pregnant with our first son, Dick's parents were more traditional and immediately said, so I guess she's going to stop working. And I'll never forget, Dick said, no, she's not. She's committed to a career. We've known this since the day we decided to get married. This is how we support each other. So he's always been there.
So, Deb, if you were to go back in time and to see Deb as she was starting to go across the stage at Virginia Tech and starting to build her career, what three pieces of advice would you give her to help her achieve the success that you have, or maybe even go beyond that?
Well, we've talked earlier about being true to yourself and just never forget how you got where you are. You know, a lot of people take advantage of the fact that maybe they got a degree, they had someone send them to college. Just take the time to reflect on just what a valuable experience that is and how now it's up to you to create value out of that. Be an active listener. So funny, I recall when I graduated and got my first job after the GS-4 clerk typist, where you just thought you knew everything. And as I am older and further along in my career, I reflect back on just how much I did not know. It's hard to convince someone at that age that they don't know everything. But if I could give someone advice, it's be an active listener and just realize there's so much knowledge out there and be a sponge and learn as much as you can. Lastly, as you grow, don't forget who helped you get there. And stay engaged. Keep that network active. Continue to learn. Continue to challenge yourself. And as we said earlier in this conversation, remember there are no barriers. There's no glass ceiling. You can crash through any of those things and turn those barriers into a speed bump. And just go where your passion leads you.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Deb Alderson, President and CEO, Sotera Defense Solutions. Deb, I really want to thank you for being with us today and just sharing your background and your insights with us. You can learn more about Deb and Sotera Defense Solutions at soteradefense.com. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington, Wednesday mornings at 9 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.